Hey guys, how's it going? I am Griff Hoffman, and this is Boss Barrel with me this week, the man who never lets the beat drop, Jeff Brewer.
Well, there was that one time in 1997.
Never
let the tragedy of 97 when the beat was dropped for a whole 47 seconds.
That's when Skrillex was born, right?
Yes. Also, a tenth of the world's population was killed.
Oh, okay.
But the government covered it up. The Illuminati.
The Illuminati's behind it all. Totally. Did you see those Super Bowl ads?
I did not. Was there an Illuminati Super Bowl conspiracy?
No, but there's always Illuminati conspiracies, so I just figured there'd be one in there.
Well, dude, they put a microchip in my brain that transmits my location all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And they're talking to me.
Does it also prevent you from saying the words the Patriots and instead it comes out lalelulelo?
Lalelulelo. Yes, it does that. And they have voices that tell me to burn everything down.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. I get those too, but I don't know if I have a chip.
You probably do. Okay. I think everyone has one, but they just don't realize. Wait, it. It's really just a vast conspiracy.
Isn't that the thing that Clinton installed in the midnight or the early 90s? The V chip.
Dude, this goes way back. It goes way back and it goes real deep. Right to the heart of it.
That's what she said.
So how you doing, dude?
Great.
It's been a while since we got together.
We did. We had to take a week off because of vocal difficulties and
Jessica brought home a cold, which then passed to me, which then passed to my dog of all things.
You have a new dog.
We do have a dog, which we are trying to...
You gave your dog a cold?
Well, when you make out, I guess, you know.
So
there's always that risk.
You just, like, trans-species crossed the flu barrier? Like, you just had backwards chicken flu? Bird flu?
Yes.
Swine flu?
Yes. Well, I bought him so I could have someone to make out with.
Uh-huh.
And then yes, I created a hybrid disease.
Oh man, Japan is screwed.
Yeah, but I had a pretty crappy cold, which I still kind of have a little bit of it going on. But I had no voice for all of last week, pretty much, which was interesting at my job.
Yeah,
I alternately sounded like I was like a boy asking a girl to prom, like with my voice cracking all the time, or just like I had no voice at all.
Yeah.
So. It would have been a hilarious podcast, but not a useful podcast.
Yes, that's great. This is the one where Jeff doesn't talk, and then by him not saying anything, I'm right about everything.
Funny you should say that, because I think there might be a little disagreement on this podcast.
What? We never disagree about anything.
If only there was a mediator, a third party, they could swoop
in and save the day.
Yeah. Sadly, we think he might have fallen asleep.
To death.
Yes, to death.
The sweet sleep of death.
We're speaking, of course, of the illustrious James Scherer, who is a not-so-infrequent guest.
As Esquire aficionado.
Yes.
His Majesty.
Remington. I believe the last of his titles is Remington. I've never really questioned it, but it's there.
It's just the last of the titles. He's like the Highlander of post.
Well, you forgot
postgraduate
about,
degrees.
There was also, there's another one. That's the last one.
Save it for the sequel. Save it for the sequel, Scherer.
Yeah, but without a mediator, the gloves are off.
That's true. It's going to get dirty.
I fully expect that we'll leave this podcast. One of us will be
not talking for another week.
Exactly. The tension. You'll feel that tension the next time we talk. It'll
be
like normal, except you'll know.
Yeah. Well, this time I've got a cold and I'm on some cold medicine. So
oh no!
Get ready.
I feel like I've been passing this cold like electronically to everyone I communicate with.
Yeah. I'm all
Yeah, every person whom I communicated with about this cold is now sick.
I got the V cold, the virtual cold.
Yeah. Anyway, though, since we got a pretty substantial bunch of things that happened, you want to just kind of dive right in and get talking about the games?
Hold on to your butts. We've got 2 weeks of stuff to talk about here, so this might be a two-parter.
Maybe.
Probably
maybe.
Not, though.
Yeah. But anyway, Maybe we should just dive right into what we've been playing over the past couple of weeks here.
Yes, let's.
Did you want to start out, or you want me to dive in with my stuff?
Maybe we could start in the mutual territory.
All right. Well, I suppose that would be Ground Zeroes.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes?
Metal Gear Solid 5 Groin Zone.
Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Hamburger.
Growing Zolder.
So yeah, that came out March the 18th, about a little over a week ago.
For current gen and old gen consoles.
$30 for what some have described as a glorified demo and what others have described as a glorious demo.
Ooh, yikes.
We both played that next generation experience.
Yeah. Well,
and we got some opinions. Mm-hmm. Griffin, I want to hear how you felt about it.
Not great. I didn't really like it. The end.
Tell me more about that.
I played it on PlayStation 4.
As did I.
Yeah, and boy, it's weird not setting this up. So, I mean, Ground Zeroes is, like you said, the kind of prequel to Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain, which is the next installment in the Metal Gear Solid series, focusing around the progenitor of the titular hero, Solid Snake, Snake Man, Mr. Snake, Boss, Snake Boss.
Or as my girlfriend calls him all the time, just Snake Eater. They're all Snake Eater.
Awesome.
She'll be watching me play and she'll be like, oh yeah, that's Snake Eater.
Yeah. I love his voice.
Not anymore.
Yeah, so this Ground Zeroes, I didn't like it because for many reasons. Okay, so let me tell you what I enjoyed about it. I enjoyed that it is setting up what appears to be or what has the potential to be a totally crazy, awesome new stealth game experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that only because mechanically, like, Metal Gear Solid has never played better than this.
Yeah,
in terms of
definitely.
Like storytelling, I'm completely uninterested based on this demo.
Mm.
Like a lot of the old craziness from Metal Gear games that make that Metal Gear are gone. Like it's not they're there, but it's getting more and more real and less like sentient computer program running into Washington Monument.
Yeah, and the thing is, I agree, Griffin. It is a major tonal shift. He definitely wants to like go dark, like dark with a capital D.
Mm.
And depending on how you feel about that, I mean, you can feel like he's trying too hard or whatever. I will say, I rewatched the Phantom Pain trailer. And there is still that old dude called Code Talker, who's like over 100 years old.
Yeah.
And there's the giant boob sniper and the kid with the necklace who's probably Liquid Snake. So it's probably still going to be weird. But at least in this demo, it's kind of one note in like it's just dark unpleasantness.
Yeah. I mean, the demo proved that the tech that is going to be integral to Phantom Pain's could be cool. Like everything that game could do in terms of like just animation and fidelity of like how it looks. The new controls and the gameplay mechanics that have been added are all really, really great. And this
definitely.
Game certainly proves it. It's so flat. It's like you tore. It's very skeletal. Like it's like a walking, shambling zombie. Like I am a Metal Gear, and I understand where they're going for. Where it's like, oh, this is the tanker. This is the beginning of Peace Walker when you fall into Groznygrad or whatever it is, and not Peace Walker. The
MGS3.
Third one.
Yeah.
So it has that like. Intro to the world. It's just it doesn't have the soul of Metal Gear, which is crazy bananas.
Now you said it's flat. I'm not sure if I would use the word at least personally for me. I'm not sure if I would use the word flat to describe it. I'm wondering why because flat to me kind of implies that it was just kind of lacking any, I guess, vitality. Do you agree with that? Like, is that how you felt about it? Like, it just was just limp? Like, you just were kind of like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I only flat in that. Okay, so like if you're looking at it in like the microcosm of each little moment by moment in that demo, sure, there is excitement and like there is some interesting interactions you have in like the two main beats of the story.
Can I just jump in to say real quick? I really loved how when you like highlighted Chico or Paz, it played a little audio cue.
Mm.
That I really like that. But go on, sorry. A little
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just without the prospect of like what I enjoy about Metal Gear games, like the craziness and the zaniness, like there's no reason to be playing it for me. Like I may as well go play Splinter Cell because it's a better playing game.
That's fine words right there, but we can come back to that.
Well,
but,
that's a true fact right there.
I think that's a can of worms that we could probably avoid opening. Much like the Supreme Court, we should take a restrained approach to this particular case and just focus on ground zero.
Fine. Well, okay.
I think we both agree it's a major leap forward mechanically. But it sounds like your perception of the story was not so much that it was a bad story, but that it wasn't what you come to Metal Gear for.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And because it doesn't have that that bait sitting there teasing me, leading me forward, hooking me into the next location, it feels flat because it's like, oh, okay, just go play in this little playground, and then I don't get to see Revolver Ocelot throw his jacket and shoot a bunch of people and then suddenly have an arm again. Like, without
go ahead,
it feels flat.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that Kiefer Sutherland totally botched the one-liner, the only one-liner in the entire thing, which is like, I feel like the one-liners are like Metal Gear's way of like adding levity to any like serious situation, and when he said that and it all just came out, he's like, "Kept you waiting, huh?" You're like, "No, what have you done?" Like, that was your moment to like humanize this character and you know, have like a wink to the fan base and get us energized again to play with Snake, and it just fell flat.
Right. And it also didn't help that in the standard gameplay, that is like the only dialogue you come across too by Kiefer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you get a lot of stuff from Kaz, if you want to, you know, futz around with the radio, which is kind of up to you. But you're right.
Much stuff from Paz.
Yeah. I thought Paz did some good stuff though.
Tara Strong is the poopy, man. She is the best. Get out of here.
No. The stuff that Chico and Paz were saying as you carried them were probably the best. I mean, that was the best dialogue.
Oh, sure.
The best monologue, I guess.
I was talking about like the straight up audio log for Paz.
Oh yeah, I haven't gotten around to listening to those yet.
That's your 3 minutes of first time lesbian encounter just retold to you for your listening pleasure.
Are you serious?
I am. That's what I said. That's the most Metal Gear moment in that entire demo, when it's just 3 minutes of her relating her relations with another woman.
Sounds about right.
Beat by beat.
I understand that if you collect other cassettes, you get some really, like, frankly, it sounds really like disgustingly unpleasant descriptions of the horrible shit that happened to Paz and Chico while they were being held there. I don't know if you read about it online at all, but... Mm-mm. It sounds like it crosses into some truly like messed up territory, like Chico being forced to like have sex with Paz or something, just like horrible things.
Maybe.
Which again is like, so like Metal Gear has never shied away from like torture and people suffering, but usually they kind of counterbalance with something lighthearted, and this was anything but. And I can see why that would fall flat for you. But again, I mean, it definitely fits with the theme, I think, of what Kojima is trying to do, like, which is show Snake's downfall, or Big Boss's downfall.
His descent. That's also the weird part of that whole game.
Well, it feels different from what we kind of come to expect from Metal Gear. Even if it's like canon and it fits like with what's going on, it's going to alienate some people because it's not. You know, it isn't what we expect. It's not Snake Eater, you know, with its hilarious moments. It's not MGS1 where you can unlock a tuxedo, or, you know, you talk about hind D's and shooting them down.
But there is a mission where you go rescue Kojima.
Yes, and then he like makes troll faces at you.
Mm-hmm.
the whole time when you're on the menu.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's going to be some humor in there. But, I mean, you're right. It was very one note. And, you know, the amount of plot, or the plot was kind of threadbare. Even though it was important stuff, all of it was kind of a major downer. And there was nothing, there was no, like, you know, weird walking machines or, you know, Psycho Mantis summoning unicorns like in the Phantom Pain trailer.
That's what I need in my Metal Gear game.
Yeah, it was just like, okay, here's a military base with dudes wearing military gear, sneak into it, and then leave.
Yeah.
But there, I mean, there was some cool shit going on. Like,
person pooping.
No. Well, we don't know. There might be a Johnny Sasaki in Phantom Pain, but there certainly wasn't in Ground Zeroes, so. Yeah, and by some respects, it definitely felt a little bit tech demo-y. Mm. But the tech was goddamn amazing, I thought. I was impressed by how consistently, like, the frame rate was, like, right at 60, stayed there the whole time. The thing looked like butter. It was really delicious. Yeah, and it just felt so good being in that world and moving around, even if, you know, there wasn't maybe too much going on. But just, like, I don't know. For me, the tension was always there, and I played it so slow. It took me 4 hours to beat, actually.
Yeah. I mean, what also doesn't help is you're on essentially what is, like, a flat plane. Like, there's no variation in even elevation in that world that you're playing in. And there's so much overhead lighting, and all your resources are very limited that you're kind of forced to play a different way from Metal Gear, where you're not like, I'm going to hide in these bushes, and everybody's fine with that. You're like, these bushes are 3 inches tall. They're going to see me. What have I been doing all these years?
Well, the open world element, I mean, I kind of scoffed when Kojima was like, oh, we're putting in this bullet time thing because it's harder to, you know, anticipate enemy movements in our open world environment. But he was right. Like, it is hard. Even with the marking system, like, it's hard to know where everyone is at all times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's different. And I mean, there was a little bit of elevation stuff going on. Like, you know, the area over to the right is a little bit lower. And remember, like, when you're walking over to the shoreline, there's like a little alcove underneath.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool, I thought.
Yeah, there was that 1 degree of element or elevation shift that was pretty neat.
I don't know. Like, I thought there was a lot. I actually did think there was a lot going on in terms of different ways to kind of approach the situation, but it was admittedly kind of a small playground. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess if, depending on how you play it and how you approach it, you know, the seams are going to show.
Yeah. Well, I played it very sneakily. I got into the base and got to pause, and then I was like, okay, get out of there. You know, I'll take everybody else out on my way out. And then I get into that open area, and they're like, you need to call the helicopter right in the middle here. And then there's, like, tanks and crap there. So I'm like, okay. So I do that, call the helicopter. And then I just immediately get gunned down by some stupid tanks. I'm like, okay, I'll just go Metal Gear Rambo style. And I grabbed a rocket launcher and killed everybody, and then drove around in a Jeep running people down for the next 30 minutes until I killed everybody in the entire base. And I was like, huh. Well, now I get a good lay of the land, and I understand where everything is. And now it's completely demystified.
Yeah, whereas I, when I rescued Paz, I actually made my way back to the shoreline for a stealthy exit.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, for me, the tension was really high because they start sending reinforcements and they mm-hmm. change their patrol routes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that enhanced it for me. So like for me, I never tried to break the system. And that's always a risk in Metal Gear. I feel like it's always, you're always like right on the precipice of like breaking the system completely. And I think I walked that line well, even though I ended up with a D at the end because I took 4 hours to play the mission.
Sure.
But for me, it was like always a tense experience because I was sitting there, I was doing recon, I was carefully studying the environment. So I think that helped me, you know, get more enjoyment out of the experience. Whereas it sounds like, you know, you kind of run and gun toward the end, and then that kind of just stripped everything away, and you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, like, it's more of just, I get to the end, and then I turn the lights on in Space Mountain, and I see, it's just like, oh, here's everything. There's a drop there, there's the drop there, there's, like, you get a feel for exactly where you are, like, the sheer size of the location you're in suddenly becomes realized. I'm like, oh, it's tiny, like, you exit this base right where you start the level, like, it's like, holy crap, I didn't even know that was there, I just never went through there. And, you know, I found all these different little, like, hidden things after I just murdered everybody and was like, huh, oh, that would have been cool, you know?
Yeah, and it doesn't help, I think, that that all the side missions send you to the exact same place. After it's been demystified. Like, I felt like I'd pretty thoroughly explored the area after I was done. And I was ready to go back for more because I was honestly excited for different, and like, weather and daytime, nighttime conditions. But I can understand a person being like, okay, like, I've seen this now. Like, are we really just going to go through it again, you know, 8 more times?
Sure, yeah. I mean, hey, yeah, I played the beginning of MGS3. I can't even imagine how many hours I spent doing that opening bit with all the dudes, all the Spetsnaz dudes and Ocelot in that just opening area, or not Ocelot, that Ocelot part. Like, I don't know how many times I love that playground that provided, but this was just boring for me without the prospect of more Metal Gear.
Yeah, and it sounds like the game kind of failed on this fundamental level with you because it just didn't have the thing you were looking for. It didn't have that kind of spark of just weird-ass Japanese shit, for lack of a better description.
Yeah. I mean, it is a fundamentally better stealth game now. And
God, yes. Yeah. The stealth in this game is incredible. I think they nailed it. But, it's definitely very tonally different.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that when Phantom Pain comes along, we're in for a lot more of that, because I went ahead and rewatched the trailer, and if you watch the Red Band, there's like 3 minutes of torture in that trailer.
Yeah, there is quite a bit. Yep, that's lots of water getting thrown on people.
Yeah. And I'm personally excited for it, because I want to see kind of Boss, you know, lose his mind and stuff and become somewhat villainous, or become, you know, this kind of tragic figure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for some people, that's a road they don't want to go down. They like Metal Gear better when it's, you know, more fun.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what I don't know is going to happen. Like, that's what I'm worried about. Like, when you have Kojima behind the reins, can he make Boss into a tragic situation? Or will it always be, like, well, will it always be the ending to Metal Gear Solid 4? It's like, he's not dead, two heroes meeting in time, like, just the worst freaking possible ending of all times to anything.
It's funny because someone provided a really great description of MGS4 to me, which I never thought of before, or rather not to me, but on a podcast. They described it like a clip show, like kind of like a greatest hits collection. Like, hey, remember that time when this happened? Hey, remember that time when this happened? Like, on its own, it's not that great of a product in a lot of ways. But it like kind of hits all the beats of the other games. And it's like, hey, remember that part? And in that way, like, you can't hate it.
Yeah.
But it definitely was like super bloated and had some major issues. Like, for one, you know, the ending where Big Boss just comes back.
That is by far the worst part of that entire game. But there are, maybe the second. Yeah, I don't know. It's tied. The butt launching cannon onto that stupid ship thing was, and then where you're just automatically detected, is probably the worst. The ending was terrible, but that game also did so many cool things. Like,
oh yeah, I liked it. I mean,
fighting game boss fight, giant mech battle boss fight, split screen, Raiden kicking people's butts while you like stab Vamp
shoot
in the neck.
No, there were some great moments in that game. Definitely a flawed experience. I mean, the 30-minute cutscenes, for sure, could get a little onerous at times.
Yeah, I miss 30-minute cutscenes. Again, another thing that I enjoy about Metal Gear games.
I think we're getting them again, because at the end of Phantom Pain, I mean, we sat there for a solid 10 minutes.
Yeah,
or
true,
not Phantom Pain,
true.
Ground Zeroes. And, you know, I'm interested. I don't know. Like, there are definitely problems with that demo. It's not... with that game, quote unquote, it's not perfect, but I gotta say, the stuff that happened with Paz and Chico, I was in it. I was like, yeah, this is some serious stuff. You know, this is being handled well, I thought. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not typical Metal Gear, like, I'm affected by what's going on here. Like, you know, I don't know. It got me. So I'm excited. I'm giving Kojima the benefit of the doubt, and I'm like, hey, maybe you'll get me with Phantom Pain 2, and maybe this will be a really compelling, interesting story.
Has this inspired you to go play Peace Walker?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
I would love to hear your impressions of that.
Well, I've played it before.
Okay.
I got like, I don't know. I beat the first boss, the tank, and I got a little bit farther before.
Wait, which tank? The singing robot AI tank or the just plain tank tank?
Actually, you know what? I did beat the robot AI tank.
Okay.
Which was fun. Peace Walker, the problem with Peace Walker for me is it's kind of all over the place.
Absolutely.
It's just kind of lacks focus, and you're just too many missions, and I don't know. I think I would do better in Peace Walker to just ignore all the extra shit and just play the story and just get it over with.
Yeah. If you don't care, well, I mean, you kind of have to do the extra stuff for endgame playthrough,
yeah.
But just to at least get through it and witness how freaking terrible that story is in that game is worth it. Like, it is... There's a dude named Hot Cold Man.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Dr. Strangelove.
I get that one. Okay, that's fine. That's okay.
Yeah. Okay, Hot Cold Man, your butt
weren't
bothered
about. Hot Cold Man.
Yeah. Yeah, that game, I just... It really didn't... It didn't grab me story-wise, and it didn't help that the AI was kind of terrible. You could really easily game it. And, you know, he kind of said, you know, he made the game to cater to teens, so it was a very different experience.
He made the game to cater to Monster Hunter fans.
Well, yeah, but he wanted kids to play it, basically. He wanted to bring in a younger audience. And, yeah, the Monster Hunter crowd, basically.
Right.
But, yeah, it never really grabbed me, which is a shame because I was ready to give it a shot. But, and I'm honestly kind of happy that after the kind of goofy weirdness that was Peace Walker, which just took things a little too far in the wrong direction, I think it almost feels good that he's taking it, like, in this really, kind of unpleasant and dark direction because it makes the characters more interesting.
Yeah, like, I don't know, though.
I actually give a shit about Chico now.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
You do?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just... Why?
I don't know. I think he... Like, given the stuff that he's gone through, like, I think he has the potential to have some interesting development if he's alive, even, which he might not be.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I think Chico just does better when he's this person in peril who suffered a lot. Because he was so, like, annoyingly happy-go-lucky to the point of just kind of vomit-inducing.
In Peace Walker, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about monsters. I found Monster Hunter monsters.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, if that had continued, that'd be the worst.
I want some cigar snake.
Yeah. But they repurposed him, and, you know, he's seen some shit. He's got the weird little headphone jack in his stomach, in his chest now. You know, if he's still around, they're going to do stuff with him, and it's going to be interesting.
I don't know about that.
Or he'll just... show you where to hunt monsters.
Right. I mean, the Beauty and the Beast core of MGS4 had a lot of insanely promising hype to their backstories, and then all that there was like a 7-minute talk from Drebin over a codec conversation about where they came from.
Which all their backstories were good.
Yeah.
They weren't bad backstories. It's just a shame that they were kind of afterthoughts.
Totally. But they were billed as, like, this game is going to be about exploring PTSD and how that affects people in their lives. And all these crazy boss monster people are going to be explorations and what that means and how it affects people. And I was like, wow, that's super ambitious. Okay, let's try that.
Well, hey, the bosses all had interesting designs. They were good boss fights, I thought.
Yeah, there's nothing I dislike. Even at that value, like, I loved it. I loved playing the music and them dancing to their J-pop crap, and like, they were all great. It's just, I'm saying, like, Kojima has a history of hyping the potential of what his characters can be.
Yeah,
and then not really following through on it.
I agree. I do think, though, that what he's shown us so far in actual gameplay has caught my attention.
Okay.
So I'm left more hopeful that he'll do it justice this time around.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, you know, look, maybe he's grown. Maybe he's grown as a creator, as a writer. Obviously, he's never been perfect, but, you know, he's learning, hopefully. So I'm willing to give him a chance.
Yeah, me too. You know, I mean, the best thing I think about Ground Zeroes is it is... it has made me extremely hyped for Phantom Pain.
Me too. Yeah. I can tell already that I'm gonna have a blast stealthing in that game, which is great. And the story looks pretty bananas. I mean, if you didn't like this one because of, you know, the kind of drab reality of it all, you're going to like the next one, which freaking starts with a giant exploding whale.
Right. Yeah. God knows what it, I mean, everything that we've seen from that game, it may or may not be real.
Yeah, seriously.
Oh. At the very least, there's Stealth Horse. You have a robot arm and a horn. So I'm liking that already.
You're already a demon.
Yeah. Half demon.
I also really loved how in Ground Zeroes, Kiefer Sutherland did the don't fight it.
Yeah.
Because that is literally a line he uses all the time in 24.
He couldn't even help it. It just slipped out.
Yeah. It was literally, he's just Jack Bauer.
In this scene, Kiefer, you're choking somebody. Oh, okay.
Don't fight it. Yeah. I think we can all kind of agree that was, I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Do you think Kiefer has a chance to be more interesting than Hader? Or do you think that was just like an unmitigated, like, disaster or mistake?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I understand you want a big name Hollywood actor. Kiefer kind of has that gravelly, like, intensity to him that is goes along with Snake. But he also does not have, like, the kind of, I don't know, like the naivety, like the stupidity that also comes along with Snake, like the obliviousness and like he's, and I think Kiefer Sutherland is the opposite of charismatic, which, you know, I think David Hayter has fostered in his vocal performance. Like maybe he's to a new listener, he may not be appealing, but to anybody who's ever heard that voice, like they know that is the voice. So if you're going to say your character is Big Boss and his superpower is he makes people love him by just his demeanor, like Kiefer Sutherland sounds like an alcoholic in a bathtub. Like it is just the most boring, mumbling nonsense in a performance. Like, I don't know. Very, and it's all, his voice is already iconic, and you put that on another iconic person. Yeah. Like, it's like, okay, well.
Yeah, and he's definitely not nearly as intimate with, you know, Snake as Hader is. But, I mean, maybe there is something to it. Maybe Hader didn't have the chops to, like, you know, portray a character that's lost his way.
He threw up in the studio voice acting Snake so hard.
Did he really?
Yeah. He had to, like, do a scene where he was coughing from gas in Ground Zeroes, and he accidentally, like, went for it so hard he ended up puking all over the studio.
Oh, you're just giving me a hard time.
What?
Yeah, I don't know.
No,
I mean,
no, that's real. That's for real.
But wait, he wasn't ever part of Ground Zeroes.
Or I'm sorry, Peace Walker. I get them confused because they're the same.
I had no idea. But I mean, I don't know why. I mean, maybe it is true that he just didn't have in him to go to the place they want to go in this this installment. But yeah, sure. Kiefer. Yeah. Kiefer is a little weird. I'm hopeful that he can get his act together for Phantom Pain, but only so much.
Right. Well, I think there was an interview recently where Kiefer Sutherland ended up doing voices for, it was outed that he ended up doing voices for Mortal Kombat.
Really?
Yeah. He was at WB and he accidentally said in some interview that he was like, I did some voices for some Mortal Brothers new fighting game that's coming out. And he's like, you know, it wasn't a lot of work. Also, not a lot of work. You know what also wasn't a lot of work? Doing all that stuff for Metal Gear.
So, what does that mean?
Like, no idea. Like, no idea.
Wow. Yeah, well, apparently he also voiced the medic in the chopper, oddly enough.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gaff did some, like, you know, CSI voice analysis in real and determined that the medic was just Kiefer Sutherland's voice pitch modulated.
Mm.
So there's all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories.
I'm sure there's
theories.
Conspiracy. Yep, there we go.
Yep.
Perfect.
Yeah. But I don't know. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I'm willing to let it go if it's passable.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. Like if he can do a good job with it and there's a good writing behind it, that's fine.
Yeah. Anyway, though, we spent quite a while here on Ground Zeroes, which I think is great because it's a great game. But kind of closing thoughts, I'm going to say, just to kind of give my piece, I really liked playing this game. I think it's mechanically fantastic. I think if you are okay with Metal Gear not doing the crazy anime shit that it often does and giving you what is still compelling and somewhat interesting of a story, although it doesn't have very many story beats in it. And you have a lot of money and you're willing to spend $30 on it, then you should buy it because it's really fun. Even if the value proposition isn't maybe quite where it should be. But Griffin, what is your take?
Don't buy it. Definitely. God, no. Jesus Christ. You're a fool. I mean, what I would say is, so I've been running across a lot of old podcasts and stuff, that are Metal Gear related. And one of the best ones I just listened to was, it was a Retronauts, I believe, with, Jeremy Blaustein.
I don't even know who that is.
It wasn't Retronauts. I don't know what it was, but, it was a podcast with him. He was the guy that did the localization for Metal Gear Solid 1 and kind of butted heads with Kojima, and they've kind of had like a huge falling out, and there's a bunch of crap surrounding that whole scenario.
Whoa.
But he's the guy that made Metal Gear what Metal Gear is in the West.
Okay.
He also, so one of the coolest things was in this interview, he's like, yeah, I had to make up fake military terms, which are now used by the military. Like, he's like, I made it procure on site.
Really?
Like, when he was coming up with these things.
That's so weird.
And he's like, now it's actually used. It's crazy. So there's some really good interviews with him because, you know, he was integral in the success of Metal Gear and Snatcher, if you're into that too. But yeah, and some of his little like weird insights, like little tidbits about the development process and his role and just totally bizarre little facts about the game. It's super great to listen to. So I, you know, dig into the internet and look up Jeremy Blaustein interviews, cause they are fantastic.
Interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you just reminded me one thing that makes me hopeful that the humor is not dead in Metal Gear. I was watching the like GDC reveal of, Phantom Pain as MGS5.
Yeah.
And do you remember the part where, Snake is trying to get out of the hospital and the dude, he's like crawling on the ground because he can barely move, and the dude's like, let's go take the stairs. And the whole audience was like laughing. It was hilarious. And then he's like, this isn't working, let's take the elevator. So I'm like, okay, we got this.
Okay,
like, this is still funny.
That's great. I hope there's more of those things there.
Yeah, anyway though. So Griff says don't buy. I say buy if you're dumb like me.
rent not buy.
Rent not buy. Yeah, that's probably wise. Really the best way to do it. You can probably red box it and get it all done in an evening.
Yeah, except next gen games aren't out on red box, so
okay,
don't even bother.
But you could PS3 red box it. It's, apparently the Fox engine runs pretty well on old generation consoles.
Who plays old generation games?
You and me.
Nope. I only play next gen.
But there's another game on
your
list.
No, I only play it.
It was a minor dalliance.
Dang it!
It won't happen again.
You got me.
So yeah, you want to move on and talk about some other stuff
playing? Okay. Let's keep talking about Metal Gear.
Metal Gear? You got some more stuff you want to get into?
Yes.
Okay, hit me with that.
There was a definite lack of camouflage options.
Yes, that is very true. I wonder if they will return or not.
Yeah. There's nothing.
I was actually thinking the very same thing as I was crawling around in broad daylight in a freaking blue sneaking suit.
Yeah, it's like rubber too, like reflective rubber.
It would work great at nighttime, but not in the daytime.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I don't know what they're going to do with that. My sense is maybe they're not going to do that, but maybe they will, because there's this whole mother base element, which they're oddly enough bringing back, like the base building.
Yep. Kojima loves him some oil rigs.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be another oil rig, but they're bringing back the base building elements that were present in Peace Walker, as I understand it.
Yeah, so nothing. I mean, the base building was you allocate your troops to one of three different branches, and then it quote unquote builds from there.
Yeah,
it's not like XCOM or like a RPG has like a village design element to it. It's literally resource management.
I never was particularly blown away by it, but what one thing it did bring with it, kind of hand in hand, was a lot of items.
Yes.
So that kind of hints at the potential or possibility of different types of camo, which you might bring into missions. Again, we just have no way of knowing right now.
Yep.
But possibly. Anywho, though.
Played some other games. Jeff, you played more Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. Are you enjoying it more, or are you just still going through it?
I'm going to... Yeah, so Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, it's on this list, and I played it a while ago now. Partially because we got a dog, and I don't know if you guys heard, but dogs are... they can be time-consuming sometimes. But... It's a great, great game. I freaking love that game. It is the antidote to all the problems in Donkey Kong Country Returns, for the most part. I kind of already touched on the issues. The controls really could use work. They are decent, but they really, given how few things you actually do in that game and the number of available inputs on your controller, they should have given you way more options, which is one really irritating thing. The load times kind of suck, which is annoying. Multiplayer could be handled a tiny bit better. Player one is always Donkey Kong, which is kind of a pain in the ass. Otherwise, that is a hell of a game. The levels are so much better than they were in Donkey Kong Country Returns. Not only do they look a lot better, they're much more vibrant, much more inviting, much more fun to be in. Mechanically, they're more interesting. A lot more shit going on. You move around the space a lot more. It's less just like straight side to side and more like up and down, kind of verticality, going into and out of the horizon. Just lots of really interesting and cool stuff going on. And just really, like, you can tell the development team just had so many ideas and just kept throwing them in, you know, one level after another, just idea, idea, idea. And I'm at the fourth world and it hasn't let up yet. So,
minecarts. Put some minecarts in it.
There are some minecarts in it, but they... Okay, Donkey Kong Country Returns had an entire world full of minecarts, and I'm going to tell you right now, it was not fun. All the minecart levels in Tropical Freeze have been awesome.
Okay.
They've been so much fun. They're not hard to the point of being, like, stupid, and they're also just, like, look and play, like, amazingly. One of them, you're like... You're on a minecart and you're in a sawmill, but sometimes you end up going on like a log, like a log flume type ride, and you do all these awesome things and just lots of really cool stuff going on. So they definitely improve the minecart levels. The creativity is just astounding. Great game. I'm having a blast. I'm playing it all with Jessica. Highly recommend it.
Cool.
I think that pretty much covers Tropical Freeze. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I think we kind of already got into it. But do you want me to touch on some other stuff that I have been playing?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'll touch on Dark Souls next. You've been playing Dark Souls too, so we can continue to talk about both of those for a little bit. I'm keeping on going with Dark Souls. I kind of maintain, I think I said to Jamie last week, it is like a seminal game. It is really, really good. It is like showing me, the deeper I get, the more it like shows me its bounties. And there has definitely been moments where I've been tearing my hair out, but it is such a fun world to explore. And like, the fact that I don't know stuff has really helped me. And I think that's helped you too with Dark Souls 2. You were saying like not knowing what's around every corner really makes these games much more magical.
Yeah.
And it's just, I'm having so much fun with it. And I'm scaling Sense Fortress right now. I'm about to hit Anor Londo. And it's an awesome game. And again, you know, you don't have to spend too long on Dark Souls because it's an old game. I already kind of said what I liked about it, but definitely keeping that up. I'm sure I'll have a full report once I'm done, but you can anticipate that I'll be playing that probably for the next many weeks, off and on. I was just playing it before we podcasted, actually. Other games that I am playing, I am a Square whore, so I got Final Fantasy X Vita.
Boo.
I want to hear Titus laughing in HD.
Yeah. Brush again, up on your owl bed.
Yeah. I don't want to, again, you know, kind of belabor this too much because we've, you know, everyone knows what Final Fantasy X is, but I will say it is a good conversion. And it plays great on Vita. So if you like Final Fantasy X, then you should play this, if you like it and you want to come back to it, this is the way to do it. It's not Zone of the Enders HD before it was patched. It's not Silent Hill 2 HD.
What do you mean by that?
Those were both like really shitty HD remakes.
Oh, okay.
This is, HD remake done right. It's the international versions of the game, which means if you're Square crazy person like I am, or like I was, you get some new optional bosses, you get some gameplay tweaks, some stuff that Americans have never had access to until now. So you get kind of a revised approach to progression in the game, slightly different. And you also, like in Final Fantasy X, I know you get two sphere grids to choose from now. There's the standard and the expert version, and the expert version allows for like more experimentation and stuff. There's also new abilities in both grids. A lot of interesting stuff going on there. So again, if you wanted to come back to this story, it holds up pretty well. And the voice acting, I gotta say, it doesn't feel as terrible as it used to feel. And I don't know why that is. it's definitely not different, but it just, I don't know. It's aged reasonably well, I will say. Also, there are a lot of butt shots of Riku in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
Which I had not noticed. But yeah, I'm having a good time with that. And then my last title,
Yeah,
it's okay. It is called Yumi's Odd Odyssey. It just came out for 3DS. It is a download only title. Mm-hmm. It is part of actually a long running series, which I got its start, I believe, on the Super Nintendo. The first game that I played in this series, I actually played on an emulator. Don't arrest me, someone. It was called Umihara Kawase-shun. Are you familiar with this title?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. So the premise of the game, there's this girl. She's in like a dream world with giant creepy fish wandering around and like huge, larger than life pencils and all kinds of other weird shit. And she has this fishing hook. And the whole point of the game, the hook of the game, is that you have to traverse the environment, but you have this shitty little jump, kind of like Bionic Commando. Like, your jump isn't going to get you anywhere.
Hey, you watch it.
You have this grappling hook, essentially. But the physics in the game are much richer than Bionic Commando ever was. Bionic Commando, you hook and you kind of swing along a very predictable.
Wow, man, this is like getting intense. I mean, this is it. This is it. Jeff Ting's out the big guns, going after Bionic Commando.
I love
you thought
Bionic
the fight
Commando
was going to be about Ground Zeroes, but no, it's Bionic Commando.
No, dude, I Bionic Commando is a freaking great game.
You're talking about the which game with bad physics? Are you talking about?
I guess the NES one.
Okay, I wouldn't call those physics, but yeah, okay.
Okay, I mean the physics in the newer ones are fine, but what I'm going to compare to Umihara Kawase, they're very predictable and they're very simple.
Very arcadey versus
exactly. No, yeah. You extend your grappling hook, you swing along a very predictable parabola, and then you jump at the right point and you get across the chasm. In this, you shoot your thing out, you swing out, you're bobbing and like going all over the place. You can pull the line in or pull it out, and your momentum and your movement will be affected like crazy. Just like learning to play the game is like, it's like a masterclass. Like you have to train to be good at this game. You have to practice. You have to get your mind around the concept of moving around with this hook. But once you do, the amount of stuff you can do with it is like unprecedented. Like you can climb like a vertical like wall essentially with your hook if you're good enough. And the game like actively rewards you for this because there's lots of alternate pathways you can take and lots of cool shit you can unlock just by like being really good at using the hook. And kind of the main thing with this game is like it's just got this really interesting physics stuff going on that you just don't really see in any other games. It's like Quap except good. And it's just, it's a really cool game. And it's another awesome thing about this, and this might even kind of segue into some later stuff, is it's basically, it's an indie game. It's made by a really, really small studio, like just a few people. And hold on a sec. It's just, it's the first game that's ever made it stateside in this series. And it's $30, which is, it's a little rich, but it's got a lot of stages. It's got at least 40 stages. I think it has more. And it, you know, the mechanics are super deep, and it's the kind of stuff that, that, you know, Nintendo's never going to market it, and it's mm-hmm. never going to take off because of that. But it's, if you want something different, if you want a platformer with some real challenge, some real bite, but some really interesting, you know, progression and mechanics, this is where you should go. And don't be put off by the fact that the title card is like a weird looking doujin type picture of this girl with huge boobs, because the actual game is nothing like that. Mm-hmm. It is a very
well, you had me there for a second.
It is, well, no, it's funny. It's not like particularly sexualized, but it's the odd thing is when you first load the game, there's just this girl, like she's wearing like a sweatshirt, but she has like huge boobs, uh-huh. and you're like, okay. And then you load the game, and it's just like a platformer, it's kind of like low, like not particularly impressive polygons, but it's uh-huh. serviceable. Uh-huh. No other reference to that. But yeah, you know, don't be fooled by the cover. Don't be put off by the obscureness of it. It is a fantastic game, and it is something that kind of in the emulation community and in the import community is somewhat legendary. And it is, I've had a blast with it, so I'd highly recommend it.
Was this? Do you think that this is more approachable than any of the other games in the series? And you mentioned it having some like progression. What kind of progression would a game like this have?
It's definitely more approachable than other games in the series. I'm actually glad you asked that, because in other games in the series, the way it works is you start at the very beginning. It's kind of arcade. You have like 10 lives, and then they're like, okay, try to get to the end. And the game actually has multiple endings depending on like how you make it through the levels. Uh-huh. And they're like, okay, try to make it to the end. But if you game over, you have to start the whole game over. This time, the game dumps you. It's kind of like Virtue's Last Reward in that the game is like, okay, here's the map of all the stages. Like, here's the map, like, of, you know, stage 1 to 55, you know, uh-huh. with all the different arrows between them. Now you just have to unlock them one at a time, and uh-huh. you can play any stage at any point. And they got rid of the stupid live system, and they added some, like, special powers, which make the game a little bit easier. And they just kind of, they lessen the irritating kind of unforgivingness of the gameplay, so that even if you're stymied, you don't feel like it's pointless and like you lose a lot.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of, I would say that's kind of the major concession. They also have a bunch of new characters, like with various abilities. Like one has like a checkpoint.
Oh, cool, cool.
That lets you die in a level and respawn once.
Wait, a checkpoint hoodie?
Ability.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That's more of a Metal Gear thing.
I want a checkpoint hoodie.
An exclamation point. An exclamation point mohawk.
Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
But yeah, it is a super cool game. You should watch a video of it, because it's super fun to play. And I'd recommend it. It's going to be probably the coolest platformer to come out this year, and it's going to fly under the radar, and that's a damn shame, because it's taken a long ass time for this series to make its way out to the West, and people have been waiting. So anyway.
Oh, cool. I will check out a trailer for it. Yumi's Odd Odyssey.
Yes. Known in Japan as Sayonara Umehara Kawase.
Aww. Is that the last game?
Not necessarily, although there's a good chance. Okay. This kind of stuff, it's getting... I think it's hard for them to make these kinds of things anymore. Okay. Just, you know, it's a space in Japan that for a while... hasn't really been well supported. There hasn't really been a big audience for indie in Japan, and that's something we maybe touch on later. But okay, I'm all set. Okay. You talk. Tell me your things.
I played Dark Souls 2 and Infamous Second Son. They were both good.
Are you still sticking end. With Dark Souls, by the way?
Yeah, I ended up buying it.
Oh, sweet.
I have it forever now. I got it on PlayStation 3. I don't think I talked about this before. Did I? Did I have this game for 2 weeks ago? I don't remember.
You did talk about it, and we talked about it with Jamie, and you had some misgivings. Or I think you initially had some misgivings, you were saying, but then, like, it got its hooks in
you. Oh, no, I only played it for, like, an hour before. Okay, yes. Now I remember. Okay, so following up to what I may have said before, it is really good. And I still stand by what I said before, which is, if you are deciding to play a Dark Souls game, play this one, because newer is always better. no, not necessarily true, but part of the joy of Dark Souls is, like, the group discovery and moving, like, everybody pushing forward at the same rate, and that is what is super cool about this, and, like, you know, having people who are playing the game alongside of you, and everybody's kind of, like, making similar discoveries at similar moments and helping each other out through story, I think is, you know, what is so appealing about that game to me. It is different from Metal Gear Solid because it is not the same game. Darksiders 1.
Darksiders.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Metal Gear Solid, Darksiders.
I think I need another cold medicine.
Yeah, seriously.
Dark Souls, whatever they call it. It does some things differently. I mentioned it probably last week, like the limited use for Estus Flask to begin with. A much more open-ended ability tree that makes a whole lot more sense when you're just looking at it, like stats.
Okay.
let's see here.
You can respec in that game, can't you?
You know, I've heard you can, but I sure don't know how. the limit to souls, after you clear an area so many times, or maybe get to a certain level, enemies will stop showing up, which is both really cool and also a little disconcerting. It seems like your mobility has changed to some degree. Like, animations do take a little bit longer because maybe or maybe not there's a stat associated with it. I mean, there's still that delightfully quaint, charmingly stupid Dark Souls poor design that comes along with it, where people are like, well, or the game is like, this is a thing that's supposed to do this thing, like, we have a stat that's governing how quickly you raise your shield. And then exhaustive testing, it's like, nope, actually doesn't make a difference.
Well, I mean, I think for some people those kind of arcane, bizarre stats are, like, joyous. They love them. They can't get enough of them. Well, I think they're stupid. I mean,
arcane and bizarre is Dark Souls and Demon Souls for sure. And this does a lot more to shed light on things. Like, it's not like you start the game and you're like, what item would you like that has absolutely no purpose whatsoever? In this game, it's more kind of, it doesn't have that crap. There's not stats that straight up lie to you. There's not things that are just BS. Like, the only thing may be the adaptability that's kind of up in the air right now.
By the way, the slow animation is probably equipment weight. If you're over half equipment weight, you get what's called a fat. Okay, never mind.
No, that's different. That's your roll and movement. Yeah. This is like literally raising your shield, drinking your Estus Flask.
Huh, interesting. Oh, I think they did slow down the Estus drinking.
Yes.
I saw a little bit. Like, I haven't seen much of the game, but the Estus drinking looks slower.
It sure is, buddy.
I know they have a new engine, and some people have been griping about that, saying that the hit detection is a little weird on the new engine.
So this is coming probably from people who really played the crap out of Dark Souls, and like, rolling and knowing your frames of invulnerability is just as easy as, like, hitting the first couple blocks in Mario 1-1. It's subconscious. And for somebody like me who wasn't at that skill level play, like, I feel there could be a difference, or it could just be me not playing well. Like, it could be, like, to more advanced players, maybe that is important, but on the surface level, it's not. And also, there are enough things that you can do to mitigate your play to not have to worry about those things.
Well, there are some GIFs floating around that look a little disconcerting, that show, like, weapons that clearly don't make contact and then cause death, which puts me off a little, and I still can't shake
always
that word,
trust, like, a gift. GIF is what I say.
Seriously, I know. I mean, you're right. But I still can't shake that worry that the experience might not be... It might not be what Dark Souls is to me right now, which is... I don't know. I always know kind of why I die in Dark Souls. And
there's never been a point when I've played this game where I'm like, oh, that's a bunch of horse crap. Like, I didn't get hit by that. It's always, like, it's always, you always put one toe a little bit further in than you should have. Like, even in those situations where you're like, I don't know about that. But then you're like, I should have had my shield up. I'm an idiot. Or I shouldn't have been fighting that guy that way anyway. So, no wonder. Right, like, if he takes one little inch on me and kills me from it, so be it. I shouldn't have been there to begin with.
That's reassuring. And, you know, I gotta say, I'm looking forward to hopefully completing Dark Souls before 2 comes out. And then,
Well, 2 is out, so you're screwed.
I mean, for PC. And then, comparing them and kind of seeing where I stand, and because I know, you know, like I said, the lead creatives on 2 were different. And, you know, we still haven't gotten past that kind of initial hype period, I feel like. And I think for someone like you who you know, you've kind of expressed what you like about the Souls series, which is kind of, you know, the shared discovery, the kind of being caught up in the cultural moment and all that stuff.
Yes, the exploration, all those things are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
absolutely.
And I share a lot of those. I think there are other things about Dark Souls that I like, and I until I've played 2 myself and, and confirmed it, it's hard for me to know whether it will deliver in those ways.
Well, so the more that I have played, Jeff, this is where I think this, it's a little worrisome for me about this game's design, and that is with the constantly degrading health. So when you play Dark Souls, when you die, you go back, you revert into your form, whatever, yada, 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 things happen. In this game, when you die, which happens quite a bit, it takes a small tick off your overall health bar. So the more you die, the lower and lower your max health becomes until you restore your you press the button to rejuvenate and get everything back.
Yeah, you have to use a human effigy or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Some item, you know, it's not important. What that ends up leading you though to do is take less chances and explore less, or at least that's what it's led me to do. So now it's like, you know, if I'm playing Dark Souls 1, it's like, okay, I have no souls. I'm going to go just try something. I'm going to go look around. Like, I have nothing to lose. I'll go enjoy this. But now you always have something to lose. Like, even if you're at 0 souls, you're frustrated because you just lost 40 because you fell off a ledge or something. The constant knocking down your health is a real bummer. And what also makes it even more difficult is the item to get that back is limited. Like, you can't farm them easily like you could in previous games, or, you know, you can't buy them. Like, they are fine. Well, maybe they're not finite, but they are difficult to acquire they are incredibly important for progression.
And that's a little troubling. I mean, I worry about missteps. And, you know, I also, like, I need to go in there and I need to find an area, like, as iconic as, like, the Firelink Shrine. Like, I need there to be something that really is just like, wow, like, this is a really cool area. Or, like, you know, I need to go in there and I need to see it with my own eyes to make my own assessment. And until I do that, I can't rest easy.
I mean, okay, yeah. Iconic as Firelink Shrine is, that's arguable. Like, you won't. I can't say it, but, like, definitely the Majula location, which is straight up them saying, this is the hub place. This is where the hub place is. This is where you will be returning quite often, because this is the lady that gives you new stats here. So you will always be going back there. I mean, it may not be as, like, shrouded in mystery as Firelink Shrine was, but it is... It's not trying to be as mysterious as Firelink Shrine was. And I'm enjoying that for that, because then when I am finding new things there, I'm like, holy crap, this has been here all along. Firelink Shrine is just like, you're a dick game. Like, who would ever discover this? Come on.
The most dickish thing, which actually I was chatting with someone while I was playing, and they're like, hey, dude, go to Blighttown and go into this tree and then break this illusory wall. And then break this other illusory wall, and then here's this entire area that you would have never found otherwise. And I was like, wow. Like, this area is awesome, but at the same time, wow. Yeah. Like, I'm conflicted because it's so cool that this is so well hidden, but it's also kind of infuriating. So I don't know. You know, I don't know. I'm curious as to how I would react to something that's a little more accessible in that regard.
Okay. Well, I mean, so that's what I'm saying. Like, it is more accessible in that there's this place that is straight up like your hub.
Yeah.
But it's been out for less than a month. Like, you haven't had people cracking it wide open like people have already done with Dark Souls to make all those discoveries. Like, people aren't digging into the code like they've done with that. Like, there are still mysteries to be found and unlocked. And you know, people are like, I beat the game, I think. You know, they're like, I got to the end game, you know, and it's like, maybe. Yeah. Like, there may always be more to Dark Souls. Nobody knows.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about 2 so far is that I think wisely just stayed far away from coverage. Like, I've avoided all spoilers. I don't really know anything about the game other than kind of stuff that you can just get anywhere. I think that'll help me going in to really have an interesting and maybe, you know, new experience. So, I don't know. April 25th.
Yeah, about 1 month. It'll you'll have your PC version, which probably won't work. So, hopefully that gets patched by that dude who does that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I'm hopeful that you know, they'll pretty it up a little bit.
It's not pretty.
Yeah.
It's not. It looks really good. The internet is full of liars and idiots.
Yes, they are.
You watch a GIF put side by side next to another GIF, it's just like the old PlayStation 3 versus Xbox One Resident Evil Witch Zombie is racist-er bullcrap. Yeah.
No, it's true, and I've seen it in action a little bit, and it does look like a pretty attractive game. But you know, I mean, I am playing Dark Souls right now, so why not wait for the PC version?
Sure, sure. I mean, and the PC version will look better regardless, because you can beef it up and do whatever you do with your PC magic. It's running on old console hardware, so it can only be so good. But it looks fine. It looks really good for what it is. Shadows. Okay. There are areas in that game that are graphically mind-blowing. Like, it is some of the coolest lighting, some of the best things you'll see in a game. It's just like, oh my god, I can't believe they did this on this system.
Yeah, and the thing about, I mean, Dark Souls also, you know, you never want to get too focused on the graphics in those games. I mean, I think to the point that they can convey ambiance, that's great, but part of the nice thing about that series is that they've been able to make it without breaking the bank. And I want to support that. I want to support, you know, not having outrageous budgets that require, you know, zillions of sales in order to break even. Mm-hmm. So in that way, I can't really harp on, you know, downgraded lighting engines or something for more than a few moments, because I want them to be able to do that and, you know, not go crazy on their budget. So, and I, you know, as long as they've got art direction going on, I'm happy, you know?
Well, okay, if you feel really duped by the downgrading, the supposed downgrading in the lighting engine, then maybe you should be staying on the internet more and playing less video games. Like, people who have that sentiment
or you probably aren't listening
to this.
Or you should admit that, you know, you are part of the problem and you are part of why budgets are going out of control. Yeah. And, you know, you can clamor all you want for cheaper games, but when you can't accept a reality,
right,
then you're part of the problem.
That's right. Stop being an a-hole internet guy.
Yeah, seriously.
So I guess I don't know. I won't say anything more about Dark Souls 2 because I told you a little bit about some of the cool things, like Rat Bro.
I heard Rat Bro is without hearing much spoilers, I heard Rat Bro is like the best. Bro.
I am so happy that I accidentally stumbled upon Rat Bro and committed to Rat Bro, and now apparently that it was the right decision to make.
Yeah.
So, very happy about that. I've honestly kind of hit a little wall in the game at the moment. Not because I have got to a boss that I'm like, oh, that's impossible. I don't even know what to do here. actually, twice. That's the case, you know. I read a thing on how to do one. They're like, it's easy. Just bring a friend. And I'm like, okay. And then my friend immediately died. And I'm like, oh, well, crap.
You need to bring a friend that has like already hacked the game wide open and has 99 of everything.
Yeah, I tried that, and
it's the Dark Souls way.
Yeah, I did that for one boss fight, and it was like really a huge letdown. Like,
it is. That's why I don't summon in those games.
Yeah, I mean, there is some really nice like self congratulatory enjoyment, like good pleasurisms on the brain going off where it's like, I did it on my own. You know, you beat him. But after I play him a couple times in a row and I'm like, okay, I get you. Like, these are your patterns. I understand you. It's just, I'm not good. So let's get these two guys here to mess you up.
It's nice that the option exists. It's kind of like the super guide, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So it's always good to have that there.
Yeah.
I think it kind of mitigates some of the unforgiving difficulty of the game. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think the other big thing is when you're hollow, when you're dead, people can still invade your game, which I've had happen.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I've also had NPCs invade my game.
That's been in the other, that was in Dark Souls as well.
Okay, when I was hollow.
Yeah, I think it can happen when you're hollow in Dark Souls. I don't recall. Right. I haven't gotten to one yet, but
all right.
I think it can.
I didn't know. I guess I didn't know, but that sure happened to me a couple times. So. Very cool. I guess that's enough about Dark Souls 2. Until you guys start playing it, then we can have a real conversation.
I'm excited too.
I played Infamous Second Son, the third game in the Infamous series. For the PlayStation.
Called Second Son.
PlayStation 4.
So Second Son, the third title for the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, yep.
Was it one of a kind?
One famous.
So how was that game?
It was great. I played it and finished it in like 2 days. I had a great time with it. It was a totally fun game. Like, absolutely gorgeous. You know, it was probably just the right length, maybe on the little on the short side.
I read that it was about 10 hours long, and I got more interested in the game.
Yeah, no. I mean, it is severely shorter than the previous two games. I'd say about 10 to 14 hours, maybe, it took me. I cleared everything. I did everything. Mm-hmm. The only thing I didn't do is replay it a second time on... I didn't do my usual Infamous 100%, so I don't think I will either.
Yeah.
And that's because...
Too much games.
Well, no. There's really nothing to play for the next 2 months. But Infamous 2, like, it was fun, and it is pretty, and all those things. Like, it is totally great. It does a lot of cool things with the PlayStation 4 controller. It's just... It kind of, much like Metal Gear, it's kind of missing like the soul of Infamous that I really enjoyed. Like, the stupidity and the zany comic bookness of those games are gone. And this is more of like an X-Men film where it's like, the government's against us. I'm just a revolutionary here to change the world.
That's a bummer.
Yeah.
I feel like once you get too deep into the sequels, do you know if the original like talent behind Infamous is still attached to it? Like, I know that Sucker Punch or whatever is still making it, but you know if it's the same team?
No, I don't. I mean, it is arguably better for it. I mean, it is more approachable. It is an easier to digest story. There are characters that are infinitely more enjoyable than they have ever been. it has better movement than you know the previous games. It's just an all around better game. It's just for me, the evil ending for Infamous 2 is like one of those secret best video game moments that are totally undervalued. Like, that and the entirety of Spec Ops line. Like, talk about, you know, current or old gen whatever games that are undervalued. Those are two of the biggest things in storytelling that I think are just completely overlooked.
Interesting.
Throw Nier in there too for the heck of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
love my Nier.
Infamous,
hell of a game.
Infamous is a stupid series where you're a electricity man who gets made electric because a giant ball went off and killed a bunch of people, and then their death unlocked your superpowers. In which you find that yourself from the future went back in time because a crazier mutant was killing everybody. So you went back
in
time.
Really?
Yes.
This That's amazing.
Infamous One. Your character went back in time to develop this thing to make you awaken quicker and push you into a direction of getting your powers faster so that you can save your family in the future, like how the dude couldn't, who is you.
I had no idea. I did not get that far.
Yeah, okay, and that's Infamous 1. And yeah. Then Infamous 2 is the Beast, which is that the dude from the future that, you know, your evil self came back to warn you against, I guess. The Beast is rampaging in Empire City, kills you essentially, knocks you out, blows you up, and you like float down river to fake Louisiana, where you meet this guy who can like do the race sphere thing and turn you even more powerful, so you can kill that guy and use the inverse race sphere to kill him even harder. So in this time, you run across this guy who's like instigated martial law essentially in the area because he's like a militia leader and he is anti-conduit, and it turns out he's a conduit. Surprise.
Oh, snap.
But the really cool part of his story is that he was made a conduit. He believes he was like a chosen one to do great things. He was made a conduit. And then through the process of the sphere blowing up, and his power was he could turn into like this nasty, what is that movie called? That big monster.
Pretty Woman.
Yeah. Juliet Lewis. No.
Julia Roberts.
Rosie O'Donnell. You turn into Rosie O'Donnell and Cloverfield is, you turn into this like horrific Cloverfield. He turns into that and he's like, oh wait.
Shaky caps?
Yeah. No, he turns, okay. His powers, he turns into this nasty monster and can turn people into these like horrific, like plant demon insect things, and he's like, oh crap, conduits are bad, I'm gonna campaign to be against them.
All right.
Yeah, that's kind of a cool thing. So he kind of takes the center stage as like your nemesis, all the while you're building this device so that you can kill the Beast when he gets there, and there's this timeline counting down that's like, now he's at this state, now he's at this state, crap, he's at this state. And then, you know, by the time everything wraps up, you find out that he's in the location as you are. And you end up meeting him, and he's just a regular human guy, and you're like, wait, you're the guy in the auto logs in the first game. And he's like, yep, that's me. So, huh. So this is where this game becomes totally amazing. So you're given this option. Here's the story, and this is why I really like it. It's in Infamous 2, he says to you, you find this character, the Beast, and he says, I have the power to turn conduits into their, unlock their full potential and make them conduits, even if they're, it's just like on the genetic level and they're not displaying their conduit features.
Okay.
And also, when the race spheres went off, they also introduced like a plague into humanity, into like regular humans and conduits alike. And if I turn conduits on, then their plague disappears and they're immune. And humans can't be safe. Like, I can't do anything for them. Regular people are just going to die. So he's like, this is why I'm doing this, because I'm trying to save humanity as I see it, like, as the best I can, while also killing billions upon billions of people. And then you're given, now this is where your moral choice comes in, where it's like, so what do you do? Do you take this device, blow up the Beast, kill yourself, which is part of the deal, and all other conduits and conduit babies and unborn conduit people who have the conduit gene, and then potentially remove the plague, which isn't a guarantee, but totally is because it's a video game.
Yeah.
Or do you work alongside the Beast and unlock the conduits at the sacrifice of all of humanity? So there's your moral choice. Like, that's your thing. Now, typically, you'd be like, okay, I picked the good mission, I kill the guy, everything's happy, yay! And that's essentially what happens. Like, you do that. It's a fine ending. Like, oh, Cole's dead. Yeah, you know, all the conduits are dead. The world's, you know, it's all full of humans again, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the best ending is the evil ending, because you pick this choice, and now you become this, like, floating herald around this giant monster that's, like, Godzilla-style stampeding through this, like, all these skyscrapers, and like you're literally this tiny guy just floating around his head, zapping people and blowing up things, and just like his little helper. It's so cool.
Do you play this? Yes, you play this.
Like, you were,
oh wow,
there. Okay, so then this device that could have been used to kill him, that you used to kill him on the good side, is being used by other people against him. So you're like, oh, I'll block them or shoot their trucks or whatever.
Yeah.
So you're doing all that stuff. You have this moral moment or tender moment when somebody dies. But then this is when it gets like the best part in the entirety of like the entire game here, where you have your stupid co-partner Zeke, who's this like kind of white trashy redneck, like get her done dude. But it's one of the best moments in video games where he's like, no, I am going to use this to kill this monster and save humans. And you're like, well, I have to stop you. And he's like, I have no power against you. I am just a man, but I will show you what men can do. So he's just like slowly walking forward. And the only thing you can do is press the button to zap to kill him slowly. And this is like your best friend that's been with you in two games. That like yeah. you've been forced to have this relationship. And all you can do is slowly electrocute him to death. As he's stumbling forward, like it's very powerful and totally underappreciated. And then you kill him, and then you kill everybody in the entire world. You are given the beast powers. You murder everybody, and then it's like now the world is full of only superheroes, and you're going to like have Fallout superhero world, and that's how it ends. And it's like, oh my god, now let's have a game now, and. After all that, Infamous 2 throws all that out the door and doesn't take any of that into account. And they're like, whatever. There's still monster. There's still conduit people. We just call them bioterrorists now.
That's funny.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's a history. And I have very strong feelings about Infamous, which I know I'm in the minority. But this game is better in a lot of ways, where it's like the side missions are quicker. The world traversal is a lot faster and a lot snappier, enjoyable. Yeah. It is just prettier. Like, of course, it's on next-gen hardware. Like, the particle effects are unbelievable. Neon is one of the coolest-looking things in a game. I don't know. Like, it's still you running around collecting a bunch of stuff in an open-world city, zapping people, as you've said. The boss fights are a little bland. Maybe maybe the one at the end of the third one is kind of different and unique, but ends up going on way too long. The characters are really cool. The character you're playing as isn't as douchey as he would appear to be with his dumb beanie and his crappy.
Yeah, he did appear to be douchey. Yeah,
yeah, he's not as Seattle grunge as the images would imply.
Honestly, like I said, just the 10 hours like that makes me want to try it, because my biggest problem with Infamous is that it always wears its welcome out for me. So yeah. if it is shorter, then maybe it won't.
It is shorter for certain. There's not a lot of mission diversity type, which is kind of a downfall, but also like, okay, like there could be more, but there is fine, and they're short enough to like not get in the way. I will say one of the most disappointing things about the game is when you do unlock all the powers, like it is only one power at a time. So you're not like making neon smoke bullets.
Yeah.
Like you're using neon or you're using smoke.
You have to like grab them from the environment, right?
Yeah. Which works fine. Like it ends up being really cool. Because, you know, that's how you restore your health in a pinch. And it makes for some more interesting moments in fights, too, where you're like, oh, crap, I'm out of ammo for this. I'm going to switch to this other power I may not like so much. And then you're like, oh, a new set of challenges arise.
Sounds like that adds some much-needed variety.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, all of the powers that you acquire in the game all kind of have, like, their... Okay, you've got the pew-pew R1 version, you've got the heavy-hitting R2 version, and then you've got the kind of a grenade sort of special power L1. And, yeah.
Is it just, like, cosmetic differences, basically?
No. Like, they do function differently. Like, Neon is more like laser, accurate, sniper rifle.
Laser cats.
No laser cats. No cats.
Oh, man.
There are cats in Dark Souls 2, but not in Infamous Second
Son. Second Son.
Yeah.
Praise the Sun. Infamous Praise the Sun.
Yeah. It's good. It's really good, and it's so pretty. It's probably the best thing you can play on PlayStation 4 that's like a big game at the moment, or like in launch title land.
You know, after hearing your appraisal of it, I might actually check it out because, like I said, the biggest thing for me was I don't want to sink 40 hours into what is essentially the same thing over and over again.
You
but
can't.
10 hours, yeah. I just might.
You could do it in less than 10 hours even. I mean,
awesome.
if you don't go to completely fully clear everything, and because you're better at games than I am, you would probably get through it a lot faster, not getting hung up on certain combat things.
I don't know. It took me 4 hours to clear Metal Gear, so.
I guess the only thing to caution you if you are legitimately thinking about starting to play it is the traversal before you get Neon is a little rough.
Okay.
It's a big city. It's a big location to get through, and it's really enticing to go do it all, but it's just not easy with smoke powers because they're just not the best.
Okay.
But then when you get Neon, everything is better. Like, the whole world
yeah.
is better. The whole game.
You can run up buildings, right?
Yeah. You get like Saints Row 4 power, where you're just like, F it. I'll just run everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yes.
I may get it. I'm getting hyped.
Yeah. It's great. It is very good.
Awesome.
You can
spray paint crap. I'm glad we talked about it because it definitely makes me more interested in checking it out. So
yeah. Rent, not buy.
All right. Well, I'm not a renter, but maybe I will.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
Yes. Yes. So some news happened too. That's all I played.
Some news happened. 1 hour and 30 minutes in, we're on to the news.
We can get through this quick here, though. I mean, a lot of these are just bullet points. GDC and whatnot. It's been a while since we've done this, so some things happened.
GDC. There's been a lot of stuff going on at GDC. As to newsworthy items, I mean, I guess the biggest one would probably be what? Morpheus, do you think?
Barkley 2, you mean?
Well, I mean, that's. I mean, you know, I thought everyone already knew about that. They
news
don't
the of the century. No, dude, it's been dated.
Yeah, day after Christmas.
So excited.
I never played the original.
You are a fool.
I think I might even have like the EXE, but I just haven't played it yet.
Oh my god.
Which is a shame.
You need to go play that game more so than any other game you've played in your entire life.
I'm sure I would love it.
Erase Dark Souls from your memory. This is
Shut
the greatest
mouth.
Game ever.
So, okay, Barkley 2. There's been a lot of other stuff came out of GDC.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm not sure if any of it is like worth discussing in this environment. There's been a lot of interesting things, but like, you know, some game announcements, Goat Simulator.
Yeah. Some people departing and some games, whatever.
Yeah. I think it's worth noting at least one big thing that kind of came out right before GDC is that Koji Igarashi, the maker of Symphony of the Night, among other things, has left Konami. Now all they have left is Kojima, whom I'm sure they're clinging to for dear life.
Yeah.
They
gave him his own studio in LA.
Yeah, seriously. They pretty much have to do anything he wants at this point, I think. Because what does that studio have left? Seriously, like, I can't think of a single thing.
Contra.
Yeah. But, like, what are they doing with it? They haven't done anything with it in... I guess they had that
Hardcore
Shattered.
Uprising.
Yeah. That didn't do very well, though, did it?
No.
Contra 4 was pretty fun. I played that on DS.
Yeah.
I had a good time with that. Anyway, so he left. He's gonna make more Symphony of the Night games, which is awesome.
Mm. Yes.
I don't know. Did you enjoy?
He's making a 2D game, right? That's what he said. Is it's going to be a game in the vein of Castlevania?
Yeah, he said he's gonna make
an Egovania
types. Yeah, exactly. You know, he can't make Symphony of the Night, obviously, because copyright, but he's going to make the stuff that he wants and that his fans want, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've heard some stuff about his talk that he gave where he's like, he never felt like he was pigeonholed into doing what he was doing with mobile games. He said it was a more interesting area for him to do experimental stuff, and he had fun doing it. And it's not like he really has been yearning to make a 2D game all along. He said he knows how to do it, and he's going to give people what he wants and go back to that and try and get that out of a system and then move on to something else. So,
yeah,
I mean,
also,
it's not like he's been cloistered away to just like do crap nobody cares about and just sadly cry over his whip and fedora every night. Like, that's what he was interested in. And now
I don't know though. I think part of that might have been like Japan, and
he's already left. He doesn't need to say those things.
I know, but you know, I wonder if he doesn't want to ruffle feathers.
He made a great game. And that doesn't. And
that?
I'm saying he made a great game.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he is probably. I mean, like, he just because he made Symphony of the Night doesn't mean he's like, I'm going to make Symphony of the Night again forever and the rest of my life because that's what fans want.
I agree with you completely there. I think that he definitely. I'm sure he has other interests other than just making that type of game. But I have a hard time buying that he liked what he was doing. Otherwise, he wouldn't have left, I guess, would be my argument.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I think you're right, Griffin. I don't think he just left just to make another Symphony of the Night style game. And then, you know, that's the end of it. I think he wants to try other stuff. But, you know, he's out. You know, he's free from their clutches, you know, whether or not he was happy there or not.
Mm-hmm.
This is something he couldn't do when he was there. So he's going to give it a shot, and then we'll see what happens next. But I'm excited. I miss those games. It's been, like, almost 10 years.
They're still there. They're still there. I mean,
yeah. I miss his take on them, I guess.
Order
I would
say. Of Ecclesia was pretty good.
When did that come out?
2008, 2009.
Okay, so it's maybe like six years, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Order of Ecclesia. That was a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, there's a number of these kind of creators that have left. I kind of, you know, put together this kind of idea of sort of like a rising indie scene in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of wondering, you know, I mean, is this like a thing? Do you think that there might be an indie scene emerging in Japan? I mean, you kind of know about like the structural difficulties that indie faces over there, right?
Yeah. I think that as Peter Wet Blanket Molyneux has said, indie is a fad and it's going to go away.
I don't know if I agree with that, though.
Well,
I think
there you can toe both. Like, there is the reasonable thing to think of about that. It's like, of course, you know, there's going to be people who do small team, low budget, interesting projects. And if you know, like, what is the dream of every little garage band out there? To be picked up by a major recording label and be able to do what they want. Like, that will continue. That cycle will continue to happen. Right now, we're seeing this massive influx of like small teams with doing cool stuff, and they're going to be snatched up by big companies. And eventually, you know, we're not going to see indies for a while, and then we'll start seeing them again.
Yeah, I think calling it a fad, I think that was kind of a, I think his description of it was kind of dumb, I'm going to be honest, I think he's right that some of the indies that are currently small are going to get big, and then they're going to make the same mistakes that the current big guys made.
Absolutely.
But I think that people will always be waiting in the wings to take their place.
Uh-huh.
I think that maybe what he's missed is that I think the indie scene now has a permanent foothold. I mean, maybe, yes, it's being somewhat inflated right now, but I think that once it dies down, I mean, look, the indie music scene is as vibrant as it's ever been, you know? Like, it took a while to gain a foothold. Maybe it got a little bigger at one point than it should have been, but now it's leveled off, and it has a very secure place in the industry.
Yeah.
I think the same thing will happen with indie games.
Yeah. It's the tools to get to get the funding, to get those games out there, to share those things. Like, they've never existed as they have currently. Yeah. So that's what's helping their success more than anything. It's just indie is viable. Yeah.
Now, if he had said something like, well, Kickstarter is somewhat of a fad, or its importance is overblown, I might have been able to get behind that, because I do think that people tend to get excited about these kind of new things that emerge and see them as like these holy grails. But maybe they're new, and you know, their luster hasn't yet worn off. I mean, look at what happened with Oculus Rift. I mean, yet another blow to Kickstarter's validity as a platform, because guess what? Everyone who supported Oculus Rift didn't want Facebook to buy it, you know? They thought they were investing in a company. Lo and behold, they were providing an initial round of funding.
Eh, I mean, you can view it that way, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of jumping over to stuff we probably should touch on a little later on in the podcast, but I think that indie is here to stay. I think that, you know, he might have a point about, you know, maybe it won't be as big you know, somewhere down the line, it'll ebb and flow like everything else. But I don't think it's a fad. I really don't. Mm. I don't know.
I think we'll see it shrink. But I mean,
yeah,
it
may contract.
That's just because you're going to have more companies embracing quote unquote indie developers, and this what is truly indie development will take on this new what does it actually mean? Because that you have Fez is it's an indie game that is being, you know, paid majority by Microsoft to be made. So what is it exactly? Is it an indie game? Being blurred is what's going to happen. We're going to see that get even more confusing.
That's fair. And I think also, you know, look at how, you know, Greenlight kind of, they opened the floodgates, and, you know, now it's kind of harder to get yourself recognized in Steam because, you know, there's a zillion games coming in every month. And they're going to revisit that and keep retooling that. But I think given how challenging AAA development is right now, I do think indie will grow before it contracts.
But it's not going to be indie anymore. It'll be, you know, the B tier games.
Sure.
It will be the prototype two of current game development.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe a little lower on the rung than your prototype two, but yeah, I agree.
It's
space. Going to change.
It's filling that void that exists right now.
Yeah, and that's true. I'm kind of with you there. The stuff that I highlighted there, you know, your Inti Creates, the Azure Striker Gunvolt game. I mean, that's essentially a B tier game. I don't know if you'd really call that an indie game, but that's a scene that was vanishing. And I guess it's refreshing to see somebody coming in to fill that again.
We need games in the summer.
We need games that take risks, that aren't kind of hamstrung by complete lack of funding, that take some risks, but also have some budget, you know, that have something going on. So it's nice to see that there again.
Yeah, well said.
I think it's a necessary piece.
Yes.
But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess my point about Japan was that I wonder if some of these creators leaving the big companies, which are, you know, kind of for all intents and purposes are basically husks at this point, are like a chance for stagnating Japan to kind of be reborn a little bit, to have a small renaissance, you know, to maintain some modicum of relevancy in this new world. You know what I mean?
Yes, I am nodding my head furiously. Bit Summit was just something that happened in Japan, which is their indie game kind of blowout. It's like their Japanese GDC thing. Small developers get together and show their stuff off. So supposedly bigger than ever this year and open to the public and very, very cool.
Yeah. And you know, that's kind of like the last hope for that. I mean, I'm being a little dramatic.
No,
but
you are right, because who gives a crap about TGS anymore?
No one. Yeah. I mean, attendance just whoop, hit the toilet.
Yep.
So that's kind of what I was getting at here. And you know, there's some stuff coming out that makes me feel good. I mean, you know, Dark Souls is a very promising property. I mean, you know, it obviously risks stagnancy, but From is in a great position as kind of a B-tier developer. You know, you've got Inafune doing his thing. You've got stuff like La Mulana 2, which I think in the absence of platforms like Kickstarter and Steam probably wouldn't really have had a chance of existing. There's just, it seems like there's hope yet for Japan to do interesting things, and that's great.
Right. You don't have to be Suda51 or Platinum Games to do weird crap. Hopefully you can get weird crap out other ways.
Definitely, yeah. And I'm looking forward to seeing what comes out of that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I like that country. They do some cool shit.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. They do some horrible stuff, too.
No, but, yeah, you know. You're right. Yeah, they definitely do totally. I love it. Yeah.
We went there, you know, we had a good time there.
It's,
so.
It's maybe what has molded my overall taste in video games, so it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, definitely. And having their voice, having their influence felt in the market, I think can only make things better. Just like having, you know, multiple consoles around, having that competition.
Absolutely.
You know, that's going to push the West forward. That's going to push them to explore new areas, to stay away from, like, another gray military shooter. So.
Yes.
Please, please don't die. Please understand.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Do you want to talk about weird Q Entertainment changes and that stuff? I mean, that stuff is weird.
Yeah, I just think it's funny. We don't really have to touch on it, but hey, that Child of Eden guy, Rez guy, has left Q Entertainment because they were bought by a chemical company.
Yeah.
Japan.
Sanyo Chemical Industries.
Yeah, but I think that kind of speaks to where things are.
Yeah, which right could mean now. Anything. Like, who even knows what that means?
Yeah.
What does Sanyo Chemical Industries, like, it says chemical in name, but that could just be their, like, umbrella corporation for all their smaller things, like TVs, entertainment.
Yeah.
Konami owns spas, for God's sakes. Nothing makes sense.
Sony sells life insurance.
Yeah. So, who cares?
Yeah, no, it sucks that
company's gone, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, it's just interesting, you know, it kind of adds to the trend of a lot of creators kind of leaving larger studios, although Q was never that big.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, the big guys, you know, it's kind of the natural thing. The big guys stagnate and people leave or new blood comes up to take their place. So,
yeah,
I'm glad there's some new blood and I'm glad that there's people trying over there.
Well, but, along with new blood, Mark Whitten has left Xbox. Yeah, he's been there for a long time. Longer than Trenton has been with... Actually, no, maybe not. Trenton's been there longer, maybe.
Yeah, so you said that my doomsday predictions are coming true. I didn't, you know, I gotta say, this one kind of flew under the radar for me, even though I was aware of it. I didn't really pay it much heed. Is this like a tipping point for you, or
no,
is
not
this
at all.
Just,
I just think it's been what? Let's see here. Almost 15 years of console development as we know it. Like Xbox One has had a console on the market for maybe that amount of time. Maybe 15. Got to be less than that, right?
Since 2001 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's a lot of time to be doing one job with one thing. Like maybe it's just the point where it's like everybody's moving on. And is that rats running out of the ship or is it, is it just time to change for certain higher ups? Like they've left their mark and they're ready to go.
Yeah.
I still don't think it matters. Like,
no, it's too soon to really break that down and figure out what it all means. I think definitely though, we need to they need to bring it at E3.
Yes.
Because if they don't, then people are going to start to wonder.
That is what it is for me. Like if E3 is not as insanely overly confident and like full of that Microsoft swagger that they have had in previous years, like then I'm going to wonder. Like yes, there's been a lot of turnaround, but they also need to know that they need to bring it harder than it's ever been brought to do it, to like get their footing back. And if that doesn't happen, that's when I'm going to start wondering, because only Nintendo can F up enough conferences and still be alive. Microsoft can't.
No, they can't. And it's so weird because they occupied such a powerful position last generation, but that the money still wasn't really there. Like I talked about this before. They just... It's such a weird division because they got so much mind share, but they weren't really bringing in profits like in the long term. And it's weird for them to find themselves in this kind of shaky position considering what they're coming off of. They definitely need to bring it. I've heard some heartening news, like, you know, they might have exclusive stuff going on with Platinum next year. That's kind of cool. They're launching in Japan.
Yeah, that's good news.
They'll sell those 200 consoles.
Ooh, that's more than I would expect.
Yeah, they apparently I guess I'm not sure if this is permanent now, but there's like been a kind of under the radar kind of soft price cut on the Xbox One to $450 now.
I don't know where are you getting that, because I don't.
Well, go to like Amazon. You can buy the Titanfall bundle for $450. You can buy it on Microsoft's site.
Huh.
It's been super under the radar, okay. Which is very interesting.
But in stores, it's still regular price.
In physical brick and mortar
stores.
It's back up to $499 at Amazon. Let me check Microsoft's site, because it was this weird thing where there wasn't a lot of publicity about it. But it happened.
Like, I mean, yeah, it's disconcerting to say the least that you're already getting like, you know, pretty hard drops in price. I mean, you're not seeing like PlayStation 4 bundle only $355. Like, you know, that's not happening. So.
Yeah,
it's weird that Xbox One is making these cuts, and you're like, oh, okay. I also, just another piece of anecdotal news, there's a lot of Xbox Ones on Craigslist. Not a lot of PS4s.
Yeah, seriously. You know, I will say Best Buy now has they now, or at least for a couple days, they had PS4s. They added, next to their limited stock of Xbox One sign, they have limited stock of PS4s. Mm. I don't know how long that's going to be there for, though.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
by the way, official statement, it was a promotion. They said it's not a price drop on Xbox One. The retail stores often set prices and run promotions in line with the rest of the retail industry. Mm-hmm. So basically, it was like a soft, it was kind of testing, I think testing the waters of 450, honestly. Mm-hmm. Kind of under the radar. So I don't know. It is a little disconcerting, but
yeah, we'll
look,
see.
Let's see what they bring at
can't
E3.
Wait, can't wait for E3.
Yeah. The teeth are going to be shown.
Yes.
Fangs.
Let's see here. Oh, speaking of things that are going to happen at E3. So Sony made their announcement of Project Morpheus, which is essentially their VR.
Their
strap on your head, look into this screen that becomes your life. Oculus Rift.
My initial reaction to this was, that looks cool, but who gives a shit? My reaction post Facebook acquisition of Oculus was, this is like the best news for Sony they could have gotten.
Yeah. Once again, Sony stumbles into success. As you just said, it was also announced just the other night, like in secret nighttime secret deals and handshakes.
Yeah.
Facebook purchases Oculus virtual reality gaming system hardware for $2 billion.
Which is just bananas.
There's so much besides just that being crazy in that sentence. Like, what does that mean for the Oculus development team? Like, all these people jumping ship to go work for Oculus.
Yeah, John Carmack.
Yeah,
who now works at Facebook.
Right?
Like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah, there's been even more changeover in these last couple. Like, there are more people going to Oculus. Like, and it's like, boy, what's happening? And what does that now mean for Steam working on their head mounted VR crap? Like,
yeah,
they're like, well, okay, we're out of it. Nope, screw that. Send that one down the hole.
It's hard to know, and you know, obviously there's going to be some alarmist stuff. I mean, Notch, like, within an hour was like, I'm done with Oculus. I don't like Facebook.
We'll see which is him being real or his Swedish trolling.
I mean, you know, he's a dude whom I suspect he's done. I mean, you know, I suspect he's not going to work with them. What that means for everyone else, I have no idea.
I took that statement as a joke. Like, Minecraft is on everything.
Well, I don't think he's going to prevent modders from doing it, but he was actually talking with them about making like a version for Oculus Rift, and that's not happening.
Okay.
I think it's more symbolic than anything else. I think. I mean, he wrote like an open letter, you know, saying like I didn't spend $10,000, you know, to fund to basically be an initial funding round before some huge corporation bought this thing.
Oh.
I think his sentiment echoes sentiment of a lot of backers. Yeah.
I was only aware of his tweet. Where he said, I'm not working on this anymore.
Oh, yeah, no, he wrote a letter as well. I don't know. I mean, look, nobody knows yet what it means, but it's disconcerting because, you know, people have a lot of negative things in their mind about Facebook and what they're after. You know, they have a profit motive, a very strong one, that kind of trumps a lot of other things. They're really into, you know, monetizing information. That's troubling for people. It's just it seems like antithetical to what Oculus is to sell to a company like Facebook.
Yeah.
Sure. But who knows?
I mean, they're a businessman looking to get theirs.
Yeah. And Oculus was always like a, you know, like this kind of dream project for ultra enthusiasts.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the one really weird part is you have like Carmack leaving id for that. And that kind of like, it's this playground where you can just do what you want to do. And yeah. Nope, now that's just Valve again. You got to go work there if you want that.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's super weird. And you asked a question, and I don't know if you want to explore this or not. Do you think, I mean, again, in light of the Oculus news, it's like, I don't even know how this changes the dynamics, but do you think that VR is like the next big frontier? Do you think it's something that that will like eventually take off, that will be, that, are you excited for VR? Do you think it's going to be part of gaming going forward, part of our world?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it is. It sure seems like it, right? Like, you've got three big names that are all pushing this strap on your face VR tech.
Yeah,
I can't wait. Like, more so than motion controls. I was never really into that because there's no force feedback. But VR, man, that sounds cool to me. Like, that's what I want. That's our next step into the future. And then if you can integrate motion into that somehow, that's even better. But
yeah,
I'm just afraid that it's VR is going to be too weird now.
That's where I go. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you want less obtrusive, not more obtrusive. Yeah. Like self, it's like, oh man, everybody's going to be wearing one of these things on their face in the future, just like everybody has a cell phone. You're like, yeah, but you don't look like a douche. I mean, you look like a douche when you take your cell phone up, but you don't look like a crazy Unabomber douche when you take out your cell phone.
You don't cover your eyes with a set of giant goggles. And the goggles are going to get smaller. But I think until they kind of look like Google Glass, essentially.
Even Google Glass is crazy. Like,
oh yeah. I mean, Google Glass is not practical, but until Google Glass is VR, until those two technologies converge into one thing, I don't think people are going to do VR because it's like, you got a big box on your face.
Right. And then it's, you know, it becomes like the, okay, well, you know, if it's not everywhere, then it has to be somewhere. And that is in your home, next to your big giant TV that you just bought because it has 5 million Ks or whatever. By the way, I don't know if I told you guys this, but I was at a store when they had the 4K TVs, and I was in love.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
God, it's so pretty. But
I wrote fad in the thing, but it could have a future. It definitely has an uphill battle to climb. And maybe Facebook, you know, maybe Facebook helps. Maybe a big company helps take this stuff mainstream and then it finds its applications, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Weird rocky waters right now.
Yep. Yeah, that's great. I mean, cool. Whatever. At the very least, that means that there's people out there. There are grandparents out there who are like, Oculus. Oh, well, that seems like a thing that I can talk about now. Like,
I guess,
you know, it is the brand recognition that would have never existed before. So I guess that's cool.
Yeah. How freaking weird is Facebook, by the way? They have this tendency to just, they're like, oh, hey, we just dropped $1 billion.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yep. We just bought some talk to your friends through some dumb crap.
Because we 19 heard billion.
People like Kick Messaging and iMessager.
The WhatsApp app acquisition and the Instagram acquisition really kind of put a bad taste in your mouth for this acquisition. But you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
I don't know if I feel the same way as you do about that. I mean, I don't think there's anything bad about them acquiring those things.
Well, I don't think there's anything necessarily bad about them, but I guess the whole thing kind of reeks of like just like cynicism, you know, like, this will bring us money. This is a way to further monetize users, to gather more data.
Oh, yeah.
Assimilate now, you know? It's sure. Like it feels cynical, and you know, it's hard to say, you know, they haven't gutted WhatsApp, they haven't gutted Instagram even, but I just have a bad feeling, and that's all it is, just a feeling.
Yeah. I mean, in that same vein though, like, doesn't that put some importance on VR? Like, isn't that saying that, you know, if you look at Instagram and you look at WhatsApp or whatever the heck that thing is called, like, they are both things that were very important in like zeitgeist mainstream culture, and it was brought into this big like megacorp Facebook sort of thing and preserved. So Does that mean that there is some vision as to the future that VR will be a thing that they're seeing that maybe we're not? Like, hopefully. That's really awesome.
That's a good point, Griffin. Yeah, it's like, you know, if Facebook wants to pay $2 billion for this, hey, maybe this actually has some relevance in the world, and maybe this is something that we need to actually start really paying attention to.
Yeah. I mean, now so, the only thing that would just, like, contrary to what I was saying, is if it was just stripped down and turned to Google Glass. It's like, oh, it's Facebook Glass. There.
Yeah, I hope they don't do that. Yeah. I mean, yes. not that I have a problem with Google Glass. I think it's an interesting concept, but that is not what Oculus is.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll see.
We shall see.
A lot of we'll sees in here, but you know, that's what it always is.
Yeah.
Very interesting times, though.
Yeah. Oh, I think the most exciting news here, Vita patch 3.10.
How you got all the bubbles now? 500 bubbles.
As many bubbles as your little heart could want.
599 US bubbles. Hey, I love Vita. I love that stupid little console.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't know.
The daylight savings time. You can turn it on now.
Thank God.
You no longer have to stare at your incorrect clock and just writhe in agony.
I need to go make that update.
Yeah. You should make it, and then you should buy Final Fantasy X HD collection, and then we should record that one with Josh Quayle.
Just off like a portable camera?
Yeah, we hopefully with the potato.
Okay. Yeah.
Hopefully Josh will also talk up the grass blade swords that he's been selling on Etsy.
Yeah, he's been doing
that quite
well.
That little entrepreneur.
I talked to him just the other day. He is flabbergasted by the success that he's stumbled into. So very good for him. That's super cool. On that note, just two or three more quick little bullet points here. At GDC, Ubisoft showed their engine or whatever the heck it was for Assassin's Creed Unity, Far Cry 4, and then Assassin's Creed, Comet or something? I don't know where the heck it was.
Assassin's Creed, the one that we don't care about because it's old gen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's some pictures out, and it looks pretty, and who gives a crap, whatever.
I love how they call this one Unity. But it's the one that divides between the old and the new.
Yeah. And it's also not on... Is it Unity? Is it Unity Engine? Like, what?
No, it's not on Unity.
Okay, so that's very, very complex messaging there.
It's the biggest misnomer of all time.
Yeah. It's like Transfar Ring.
Yes.
Just makes perfect sense.
I'm going to tell you right now that I have transfarred in my life.
Oh, yeah.
You haven't lived until you've transfarred at least once.
Oh, man. Do you have to put your keys in the bowl for that?
Yes, you do. You might go home with Old Snake. You might go home with Mei Ling.
With Punish Snake.
Yes.
I'm always Punish looking to go home snake. With Snug Punish Snake. Snuggy Snake.
You know that deep down he likes being punished.
That's right. He's a glutton.
That trailer alone tells you that everything's going to be okay. Because there's a dude called Punish Snake.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
everyone has a little thing about them, like a visionary who's lost his way.
All I want is another secret theater, Jeff. That's all I want.
Do you want another snake versus monkey?
No. I mean, yes and no. I want secret theater is what I want. That's it.
You might be getting something like that.
I would love for that.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see here. Seth Killian left Sony to pursue something which has been undisclosed. That's really great since he wasn't doing anything there.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was working at Sony, to be honest.
Yep.
I knew he left Capcom, but...
He was working on that PBR.
Then he just decided to drink PBR instead because it was too depressing.
I think he just stopped going to work and was just hanging out with, like the fighting game scene for... Evo and stuff, and finally it's just like, all right, I should probably not be getting paid to not be here.
He got really mad after DiCaprio was announced as the other character and just left.
Yeah.
He was like, I can't work anymore, guys. I'm too depressed.
Yeah. But, it's just Cammy.
People were mad pissed about that.
People are mad pissed about everything because the internet's full of jerk faces.
So true. So very true. Yeah. Oh, hey, we didn't talk about the Steam controller or the Amazon controller.
Yeah, so yeah.
Should we touch on that?
Sure.
Okay. So they changed the Steam controller, guys.
Does it still have fake joysticks?
It does still have fake joysticks, which is my biggest grievance with the thing, but now they have shitty D-pad and face buttons.
Oh,
Xbox
good.
Style.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good, good. Definitely. So, both Xbox style. Crappy D-pad and Xbox face buttons.
Well, it's a different kind of crappy D-pad. It's just four buttons. So it's like face buttons that they expect you to think are D-pad. Yeah. Hey, it'll probably work with a 360 controller still, so.
Yep. All right.
I guess that's okay.
Cool.
And then the Amazon controller was also leaked, and boy, that thing is ugly.
Yep.
It looks like an ergonomic disaster. It's like Ouya 2.0.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, maybe not that
far. The Stradivarius of punished snakes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's not too much to talk about there. I just thought it was... Back when this was happening, it was like day of the controller.
Yeah. Somebody else is putting out an Android-based gaming system with a crappy controller.
May what God rest their soul.
Yeah.
May God rest their soul.
Yeah.
But
good luck. Yeah.
Not too much else.
That was quite a bit. Boy. Yeah. There can't be a lot else happening going forward now. I mean, we're kind of going to hit the dead zone of game releases up until E3.
I'm hopeful for another Nintendo Direct that just hypes me to no end and then just doesn't deliver at all.
Yeah. There's been some weird little Nintendo rumors coming out, right? Like the mysterious red box for Mario Kart 8.
I didn't hear about these at all.
Oh, the box color for the Wii U Mario Kart game is like red.
It's blowing. What does that mean?
What I don't know. What does it mean?
It means that Nintendo demands blood.
A blood sacrifice is demanded. You have to give up 10 of your Nintendo coins to buy this game.
Maybe the redness means it's the final Wii U game.
Yeah. It's secret anniversary. Oh, it's got to be the launch of the year of Mario because Luigi is dead. Thank God.
Oh yeah, I'm so sad.
No, no, rejoice. He's gone.
The year will never end in my mind. Did you watch that video I sent you with the final exam on the year of Luigi?
I did.
So good. Yeah. I don't know what the harebrain. They're so stupid over there. I just can't understand that company.
Yeah.
Like, they are successful in spite of themselves.
Absolutely.
Thank God they make fun games because they can't do anything else right.
Uh-huh. You're a Luigi.
Who will it be next?
Yeah, who knows? Mario, probably. Get that man back here.
Yeah, it's been 6 months since we had a Mario platformer.
Year of the Samus.
Yeah, no. There's no way.
Year of Sonic.
Yeah, probably. It'll probably be a Nintendo Direct of Reggie wearing a Sonic costume, shaking hands with Iwata, and then like Shigeru Miyamoto says he shows up on screen, and then there's a bracket laughs.
I just
like in all the interviews.
I hope to God somebody at Nintendo bows out. So you can have the grand conspiracy of what weird Power Ranger Strike Force is being assembled behind the scenes with Mark Whitten, Jack Trenton, and Reggie. Like, this there's weird triple
the thing
tag
about
team.
Nintendo is like, there's just no way because, and I think this is what hurts them the most over here, they just don't, like, they don't have an American presence. Yeah. Like, they do, but they don't. They just, they're so insular, and it's hurt them so much. I don't know what they're thinking.
I want that to happen, Jeff.
Anyway, your crazy ideas aside, it just sucks because like Bill Trinan, such a passionate dude. He's a freaking puppet, you know?
Oh yeah. Yep.
Ugh. This makes me so mad. And they have Reggie. Reggie's hilarious, but he's the worst. He's like the best and the worst at the same time.
Heaviest of Nintendo.
He's a little errand boy. I would not want his job. Seriously. Oh, yeah.
You guys
don't envy that guy.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. But
one of many problems with that company. But E3, man, gonna be a hell of an E3.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. Hopefully they'll have a conference, unlike last year.
I mean, last year they had a decent Nintendo Direct. It was probably the best Direct of the year.
Yeah, true. Good point. That was their Zelda announcement, right?
Hyrule Warriors, you mean? Oh, no, you mean Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
I think they might have already announced it. I can't remember anymore.
Oh, okay. There's some other Smash Bros. Something or another came out. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Of course, more characters, less characters, characters, characters. I don't know.
Nothing to really.
Virtual console releases.
Oh, yeah. Game Boy Advance. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, ambassadors. Our time is over.
Well, actually, no. They only have them on Wii U. They don't have them on 3DS yet.
Oh, okay.
Because Nintendo.
Yep. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's just so disconcerting, though. Like, even Smash Brothers, like, just there's no, like, I'm not hyped for that game at all. And, like, I don't even want to. Think about the darkness that is Nintendo in my heart.
We're going to have 2 months here to forecast this when there's nothing else to talk about. About how much it sucks that Nintendo's not doing anything.
It really sucks. What the hell happened?
Yeah. Well, they made this platform called the Wii U.
I guess the writing was on the wall. I mean, I don't know.
We got to save this Wii U talk for next time because we're getting up there in the 2 hour zone. So unless there's any other huge pressing thoughts you have besides Nintendo going to die in a lonely corner hole.
Nah,
no.
We done covered it good.
Okay, well, thanks for listening. I'm going to go watch a trailer for Yumi's Odd Odyssey.
Yeah,
and
you got to tell me what you think.
I will. I will tell you what you think, what I think. And that's it. Go play Charles Barkley, the video game, because it's the greatest. Everybody.
I shall.
Not just you. Everybody needs to.
All right.
It's free.
All of our listener.
Do it, Jen. All right. Thanks, Jeff.
All right, dude. I was going to say, we should just start calling out names at the end, like Bobby.
See if we can get one.
Yeah, we'll hit on one eventually.
Yeah.
All right, dude.
We'll see you next week.
Adios.